5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Wendy Bell. Inspiring solutions to save America. One show at a time. Are you ready to get on board?
They believe that they can destroy this bond that exists between you and Trump if they somehow make Trump look bad, make Trump look like a reprobate, embarrass you about Trump. They can't do it because you came before Trump. Desperately want Trump gone, and I know that they desperately want it codified that Trump cannot run again, because make no mistake, they remain scared to death of you, and they remain scared to death of Trump. Trump, 75 million, 80 million votes. And I'm going to tell you, you're not going anywhere. Even if Trump does, you're not. Which I think remains one of our big campaign strengths going forward. They can't separate you from Trump. And more importantly, they can't separate you from the ideas. They can't separate you from MAGA. They can't separate you from Make America Great Again.
From sea to shining sea, 3 hours of bold truth and excellence. The Wendy Bell Radio Program.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Wendy Bell Radio Program. Thrilled to be with you. Wendy Bell Radio Podcast. It's all you have to plug in wherever you go to get your favorite listening material. Wendy Bell Radio. And you can join our 2 million person army and growing. Love being here with you guys. Thanks so much. Now, I will freely admit to you, I come at today's show with personal experience. You know, when you've been in a position where someone you love has been victimized by the lack of adults standing up and doing the right thing, you don't go back. You start to see things in a different way. We all have experiences in our lives that awaken us and kind of humble us when you look back and you're like, man, this has been going on for a long time and I just never saw it until now. We all have those aha moments. My aha moment literally came on the 11th birthday of one of my sons. You know, where I am as a human being, as an American, is that when it comes to justice, there's proof. You have to offer proof. You have to have corroboration. You have to have a point, a case that is provable, not corruptly, but has demonstrable facts that allow an outcome to be decided upon. In America today, all you need to be is a triggered wacko, a protected class, a victim of something, and you need to allege something happened to you in order for, I guess, your own relevance to feel important, to see what you can get away with. I don't know. But this son of mine, on his 11th birthday, was called into a principal's office alongside me and was accused of doing something he did not do to two female classmates, one of whom happened to be his best friend. So I'll set the table with that and allow you to feel the kick in the teeth that's coming. There was no proof. Just two girls saying something. And my son was stunned. He didn't know what to do. What? I didn't do that. And so I said to the principal, well, you have to have corroboration. Somebody had to see it. Right? This can't be two 11-year-old girls concocting a story about a classmate to see what they could get away with that will lead to a swirl down in my son's life. But this particular principal was a coward, a crusader, and my son paid the ultimate price. We petitioned the diocese of our city. Know the archbishop who rolled over and didn't return my messages. And when I became more urgent, he sicked his attorneys on me, and I was threatened. So not only did I lose our local elementary school in my mind, I lost part of my faith. Somehow my kid didn't. I don't know how. And I would be lying to you if I didn't say to you that I drag my ire somewhat with me every single day. When you see your child victimized by something, it can tear your family apart. It can tear your neighborhood apart. My story has a silver lining, though, because the parents showed up for my kid. There was a meeting at school on a Saturday morning, and 135 people showed up demanding answers from the staff, from the church, from the priest, from the diocese. And they signed a petition. And at the end of it, though my son had been flushed down the toilet, the priest ended up resigning, retiring, they said. The deacon who was involved in it got shuffled to a different parish. You know how the church likes to do such things. And the principal got sacked, only to go somewhere else to be a malignant influence on other children. As I said, I come at this with personal experience. So when I saw this video on the Daily Wire of a 13-year-old middle schooler, a seventh grader, at a school in eastern Pennsylvania, tearfully appearing before the school board to describe how she brutally watched a classmate terrorize and beat a female student in that class, as the teacher stood by and did nothing, my blood started to boil. Here's your story. A 13-year-old girl spoke at a school board meeting, tearfully describing how she watched a student use a Stanley cup, one of those big tumblers, big steel or aluminum tumblers, used a cup to brutally beat up a female student. That teen girl who attends Pembroke Middle School north of Philadelphia accused school officials. It takes a 13-year-old. Accused the school officials of failing to step in despite being warned hours ahead of time that the attack was coming. The attacker is a trans-identifying male student who identifies as Melanie. Doesn't this sound so similar to Loudoun County? Oh no! Their transgender status makes them above the law so that they can beat children. This Melanie bludgeoned a girl so that blood spewed off of her, squirted from her face, all over the table, all over the floor, as the horrified middle school students watched. This transgender student, Melanie, had put together a hit list, and the girl you're about to hear describe what she witnessed was number two on the list and frantically went to a teacher who told her, "Honey, we've got you covered. We'll protect you." Really? Listen.
Wednesday morning, I went to the guidance counselor and told her, since I was second on the hit list, knowing that there was something going to happen, because there was a girl she was targeting every day at lunch. And they would go to the counselor and tell them every day that this is going to happen. And Wednesday, I went with two others, and each of us filled out a whole paper full of what's going to happen and why it's going to happen. And then I went to chorus, and I was told, "Watch your back. He is going to come for you and this other girl at lunch." And when I was at lunch, I was terrified, and I told Miss Vittori that that was happening, and she said, "Don't worry about it, it's not going to happen."
Except it did!
And early that morning, I was told I was not going to see Mel for the rest of that week.
The transgender
but
student.
I was in lunch, and all of a sudden, I just hear all this screaming and everybody running. And I see Mel running in after somebody, and everyone's screaming and running, but the girl who got attacked didn't see it because she was faced backwards, and all of a sudden you just hear these terrible, like, loud bangs of the Stanley bouncing off her head. And then you see Mel grabbing her hair and hitting her against the table and just repeatedly hitting her with the Stanley. There was blood going everywhere. I was the table right behind it, and all you see is blood everywhere. And it was just, and then you say in your email that it was 8 minutes, but we timed it. It was 28 minutes. And we had to sit in there and watch them clean up her blood off those tables and ground. And we had to watch them take her out with blood dripping down her face. And I will never forget that. And laying in bed last night, I just kept repeating it in my head. And we shouldn't have had to sit there and just watch that, like, watch them clean up her blood with the mop. Watch her repeatedly yelling that I'm gonna murder you and just hitting her with the Stanley. Oh, and God. I don't get how, like, you couldn't have stopped it. It was 5 hours from when I told you it was gonna happen and when it happened. It was 5 whole hours. I don't get how you couldn't have stopped that. And how Ms. Fattori said, don't worry, it's not gonna happen. We have her under control. But clearly you didn't.
Children being failed, children being beaten, children being raped. Where are the adults? Cowards. When we come back on the Wendy Bell Radio program, America the unaffordable. So much for that buying a house. Oh boy. I mean, this is crazy. Crazy what we're doing in this country. And everybody wants to say, Joe Biden's neck and neck with Donald Trump. Really? Don't go anywhere. You're dialed into the Wendy Bell Radio Network. You know, before I bounce on to this just ridiculous next level chapter of unaffordability, I mean, this whole cycle that we're in, limping to the finish line, hopefully in November. It's unaffordable. It's purposeful. I want to tell you about this school, this Penn Brook Middle School. This school is ranked 71st out of 893 middle schools in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. There are 63 full-time teachers and 3 counselors. And that 7th grade student recalls 28 minutes that no adult in the room stopped a transgender identifying student from beating the tar out of a classmate with a tumbler to the point where the child has suffered a traumatic brain injury and needed staples in her head. And I want to read you the superintendent. First of all, the attacker also yelled, I'm going to murder you, repeatedly to students. The violent incident played over in her head as she lay in bed that night, she told board members. Said she was second on this person's hit list, begged school administrators for help 5 hours before the attack. A guidance counselor promised her it wouldn't happen. The attack wouldn't happen. Don't worry, sweetie, we got you. Well, the incident occurred at about 1:20 p.m. in the school cafeteria. Police and first responders called to the scene. Kind of late. Surveillance video shows the 7th grader walking along a lunch table when the student accused of attacking her runs up and begins hitting her in the head with an aluminum cup, a metal cup. The female student who was attacked needed staples in her head and is on concussion protocol. Now, while the incident is still under investigation, we can't comment on an ongoing investigation, right? Totally avoidable! In a statement, Penbrook Middle School Superintendent Todd Bauer was quick to say rumors are false that the tranny attacker was expelled from another school for violent behavior. Didn't make mention of the student that was beaten. Didn't say that they're in the emergency room with the family, that they'll do whatever they can. Nope. Just like Loudoun County, Virginia. Protecting the transgender student. It doesn't end until we force it to end. I want to talk to you quickly about this. I had pulled an audio soundbite for you, but I don't think I'm going to play it for you. There's not time. This is yet another stab. It's another poke in the gut of the American dream. A survey that shows nearly 38% of people in the United States who rent a home, rent an apartment, don't believe they will ever be able to be in their own home, to afford their own home. 38% saying the American dream is out of grasp. Actually, Brock, we do have time for it. This is the process of beating and breaking everybody in this country, bringing you to your knees to give up, to surrender, to quit. Listen.
Let me just show you, to your point, what mortgage rates have looked like over the last few years. Now, if you were lucky enough to lock in rates in August of 2021, well done. Let's say your mortgage repayments was $1,000 there. Today, your option is paying double that. Even for above income, average income families, that's a huge whack. So you understand the problem here. Now, it's great, let's be clear, if you're a homeowner, but if the big American dream is to own your home, perhaps leave that money to your kids one day, that's getting further and further away. And it doesn't really change until Federal Reserve starts to bring rates down, these things ease, people start to sell their homes, and that's going to take some time.
Yeah, it's going to take some time. It's going to take November is what it's going to take. I love these people sitting on CNN's desk. They're like, oh, it's terrible. People can't afford a home. I mean, it's terrible. Oh. It's because of you idiots. You clowns who spread the farcical garbage every day that Donald Trump is the biggest thing in the world. This is a story that everybody's going to talk about. Meanwhile, Joe Biden and those in his echelon of suck every single day do something that puts us more and more in danger, that takes the American dream out of your grasp, certainly out of your children's. Is this the first time in our history that we're going to say we can't give our children or expect to leave to them a better country than we found? Hell yeah. Welcome to the United States. When we come back, the media never learn. It takes a comedian, Jon Stewart, to blow the lid off of the ridiculousness of this Trump trial in Manhattan and the coverage of it. At least it's entertaining, friends. Do not miss it next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. So when I first started in television news, I was basically in graduate school at the University of Missouri. It was 1992 to 1994. I was getting my master's degree. And the thing about Mizzou is that the school owns the NBC television station in Columbia, Missouri. And it's a teaching television station. So all of the students do the jobs, not the director position per se. But they are the producers, they are the anchors, they are the photojournalists who go out and capture it, they are the reporters, they're all of it, right? It is total immersion, hands-on, get involved, this is what you're doing. So it's been a long time, 1992, what, I don't even want to know how long it is, 30-odd years, 32 years. I noticed something in those decades that it is not a good thing, I think, for news gathering. And it really started when CNN started their 24-hour news coverage, right? Headline news. Headline news, 24 hours a day. Even if there's not 24 hours of news, we're going to create the illusion of 24 hours of news because we can sell it, we can make money. And it lasted for a while. It was reasonable for a while. But some days, what if you only have 8 hours of news? Well, you're going to have to find a way to spread that out. And so every everything in the world becomes breaking news. This just in. It's embarrassing. It was embarrassing as a journalist. Some of the things that we would go and call breaking news. Hurry up, get out to the set. We've got to get breaking news. And you're like, what? Really? So like racism, if everything is racist, nothing is. Breaking news. Everything's breaking. Nothing's really all that important. And so you're sort of, you're totally desensitized by it. You're like, you know, this is not news. Certainly not emergent news. A house fire in some remote, you know, neighborhood might be breaking for the homeowner who's about to lose their house, and maybe for the neighbors nearby who are like, snap, we've got all this emergency personnel on the street. Let's hope that the fire doesn't spread, right? So for maybe 10 people, it's really big news. Is it really big news for a community of a million or 2 million people? No. And so this is the mental, I think, conundrum of those in television. We got to make money. Money, 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 money. Whatever makes money. Even if it's not really news, we're going to sell it with bells and whistles and all sorts of banners. And wow, we're going to go up to the chopper. Let's go live. Right? And so much of it, you're like, I really didn't need to know that. That's not relevant. Well, Jon Stewart is doing a great job calling out the breathless coverage of this. It's a trial of the century. It's Donald Trump being persecuted and prosecuted for daring to not just love America, but for not being part of the swamp. And they realize that if he gets back into office, you know as well as I, the jig is up. The jig is up. He was fooled the first time, made some bad decisions because he trusted some folks he ought not have. If we know anything about Donald Trump, he ain't doing that again. And they are petrified. There's a reason why Benny Thompson wants him to lose his, I said Social Security or whatever the other day I meant, his Secret Service protection, right? They want him gone. They need to take him out. So here's Jon Stewart. I thought this was phenomenal. And you need to hear how ridiculous the coverage of this trial, this is day three, has already been. Here's Jon Stewart talking about Trump's hush money trial and really saying, look, this is the justice of America on display. Can justice be blind? Can the media be fair? Have we learned anything in the several years since they went nuts? 95% negative news coverage, wall-to-wall, 24-hour, breathless, breaking news about Donald Trump. Have they learned their lesson? I'm going to go with no.
This trial will obviously be a test of the fairness of the American legal system, but it's also a test of the media's ability to cover Donald Trump in a responsible way, a task they have acknowledged they've performed poorly in the past.
I think to the degree that the media had lessons turned in 16, they seem to have been learned.
It's irresponsible for cable news networks to give Donald Trump hours and hours of free airtime.
Way too much speculation and liberal wishful thinking and attempts to connect dots that did not connect.
It's the media's responsibility to not get distracted.
I think we were much too busy chasing after shiny objects.
All of us have learned some very valuable lessons in the last couple of years in delineating what's significant, what's important.
So brave. Well done. And I think for this trial, we will see the seeds of that introspection bear fruit. Or we will learn that learning curves are for.
Here we go. It's on. It's happening. History will be made.
Shaping up to be the trial of the century.
Maybe the trial of the century.
The trial of the century.
But just might be the trial of the century.
The tax man is here, Donald Trump.
He will finally be forced to face the music.
The legal walls closing in around Donald Trump.
The legal walls are starting to close in on Donald Trump.
Yes, this time, Mr. Bond.
It's so ridiculous. They think that everybody's not paying attention to the obvious bias and ridiculosity and the penchant for, oh my gosh, this just in. And he goes on. It gets better. In this audio soundbite, basically he underscores the idea. If everything is breaking news, it's not breaking news. It's obnoxious. Go.
Perhaps if we limit the coverage to the issues at hand and try not to create an all-encompassing spectacle of the most banal of details, perhaps that would help.
You're looking at live pictures in New York City of Donald Trump's motorcade.
It's about a 20-minute drive between Trump Tower and the court building.
Trump leaving Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue.
They're now making their way across town along 57th Street. They just crossed Park Avenue, making their way up towards Lexington Avenue.
He's heading down the FDR
to the Manhattan Courthouse on Chambers Street.
Arriving at this intersection of American history with defiance.
Arriving at the intersection of American history with defiance, the brilliant juxtaposing of the gravitas of the moment with simple traffic terms was... He arrived at the intersection of American history where he put a quarter in the parking meter of destiny. Leaving the car! Looking to avoid stepping in the urine puddle of jurisprudence. Seriously, are we gonna follow this guy to court every f***ing day? Are you trying to make this OJ? It's not a chase. He's commuting.
Isn't it great? I mean, truly, it's so great because everybody sees it. Now, there's that fringe. You've got 10%, maybe 15%. Die hard, watch this stuff all day long. They are hook, line, sinker, indoctrinated, believe all of it. The other 80% were like, come on, man, you got nothing better? Jon Stewart is not finished. He says rabid and irrelevant news. He calls out Jake Tapper breaking into some guy with a first view inside the courtroom. Really? Listen.
So... the media's first attempt, the very first attempt on the first day at self-control failed. And I'm sorry to say that it... I'm sorry, hold on, we're getting breaking news.
You know, he wanted to get a jury seated, so we had a lady...
Bill, I'm sorry to interrupt. I apologize. We're just showing the first image of Donald Trump from inside the courtroom. It's a still photograph that we're showing there. Just don't want to make sure our viewers know what they're looking at.
Yes, for our viewers who are just waking up from a 30-year coma, this is what Donald Trump has looked like every day for the past 30 years.
It's great. It's great. It's so preposterous. It's so preposterous. And finally, he ties it up in a bow by again calling out Jake Tapper's ridiculous obsession with the first sketch. Remember last week we had the sound of the woman who's the sketch artist, and Erin Burnett on CNN was desperate for her to say that Donald Trump had fallen asleep in there. And she was like, no, I was just sitting too far away to see his eyeballs to draw them. That's how stupid this is. Go.
We have a photograph and we have eyewitness accounts. But do we have anything in a pastel?
A courtroom sketch that we're getting in right now. I'm looking at the courtroom sketch and Mr. Trump looks like he is glowering. I'm not sure if that's supposed to be a glower or just a glance. And I don't know how this is. It's art. It's not necessarily it's artistic journalism, but it's not a photograph.
Why are you showing it to us? It's a sketch. Why would anyone analyze a sketch like it was? It'd be like looking at the Last Supper and going, why do you think Jesus looks so sad here? What do you think? It's because of Judas? What if we interview one of the waiters at one of the tables from like a different section of the restaurant who maybe didn't actually see him, but, you know, we got time to kill. Well, I guess we'll never know. Unless... we could talk to the person who drew the sketch, but do we have the time? Nothing but.
Christine Cornelis, who's in the courtroom today, the official sketch artist. I want to show one of your sketches today. We're going through some of them, but this one, it appears in this one that his eyes are closed. What was happening here?
My apologies, ma'am. I was sitting 50 feet away. I was having such a struggle to try and get those eyeballs in.
Damn it, woman! Does Donald Trump have eyeballs or no, ma'am? Does he or no? You are in the room! Tell me!
It's It's fantastic. I'm literally sweating because it's hilarious. It's sad, right? It's so sad because they've ruined it. They've ruined the news. They've ruined and taken the integrity, the objectivity, the necessity of having somebody go out and find something that is worthy of discussing. They've blown it up. But it's the same thing with Fauci and with the FDA and the CDC and science and medicine in general. They've ruined every single thing. Education, healthcare, fiscal policy, everything ruined. And because of the insatiable 24-hour news appetite, not for those of us like you and myself. I can live without all of that. It's all they know how to do, but they forgot how to do it. Does he have eyeballs? It's preposterous. And that is what Donald Trump has been going through for the last 7 years. And it doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon. Therefore, we thought you guys needed a laugh. So hopefully you guys liked it. How about this? Is equal justice under the law just a meaningless slogan? Something pretty interesting from a former U.S. Attorney General, acting U.S. Attorney General, blows up this case in Manhattan succinctly and appropriately. You need to hear it next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. You know, when you hear somebody whose life has been in justice, and that's who Matthew Whitaker is, a former acting deputy U.S. Attorney General. He wrote an article in Breitbart that I think is very illustrative of this weird new normal we're in, where you see things that are going on that you know are wrong, and yet you see other people like the media, anybody on the left, fanning the flames of fiction. And it doesn't make sense. And then you hear somebody like Matt Whitaker say what he says and blow up the ridiculosity of this Manhattan hush money case against Donald Trump. And I want to read this to you because you might not stumble upon it otherwise. All right. So Breitbart.com, this is the title. Conflicts of interest abound in Judge Merchant's handling of the Trump sham trial. So as John Stewart accurately describes, the media's fascination and just lunacy covering Donald Trump 24/7. This just underscores that there is no justice, because this shouldn't be a case and this judge shouldn't be the guy hearing this case. And anybody who's paying attention knows that. One of America's foundational principles is equal justice under the law, or the principle that no matter who you are, what you stand for, you're entitled to a fair chance to make your case in a court of law. Certainly, that's why Lady Justice, the statue outside the Supreme Court, wears the blindfold and holds a scale. The blindfold, obviously, to symbolize her impartiality and immunity from outside influences. And the scale to signify her objective weighing of the evidence in front of her. Unfortunately, this bedrock principle of American self-government has been put in jeopardy by the trial of Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, currently underway in New York. Though most Americans expect our judges to be neutral arbiters of the law, the judge here, Juan Merchan, the judge overseeing the trial against President Trump, is anything but. And we can't forget this, guys, all right? This is why I wanted to read this to you. As it turns out, two major Democrat clients of Judge Merchant's daughter have raised over $93 million in campaign donations through her firm several times, using this very case Judge Merchant is overseeing in their fundraising pitches. Think about that conflict. It's crazy. And it's not the only one. Ms. Merchant, who previously worked for Vice President Kamala Harris's presidential campaign, currently works as the president of Authentic Campaigns, as we've told you on this program. It's a left-wing presidential campaign, or rather consulting firm based out of Chicago. And two of their top clients include Senate candidate and Congressman Adam Schiff, the radical California Democrat who became famous for his outright lies in pushing the Russian collusion hoax, and the Senate Majority PAC, a major fundraiser for Democrat Senate campaigns. These are people who are working with the judge in this case's daughter. Do you think that should force him to recuse himself. Yeah. Now, according to campaign finance records, Schiff's campaign has raised over $20 million since he began fundraising off of President Trump's indictment last April. And Senate Majority PAC has raised a whopping $73 million. They don't care about the facts, the truth, the justice. They care about winning. They care about money. They care about power and staying in control. Now, a deeper dive into the campaign finance reports shows that Authentic Campaigns received more than $10 million from the Schiff campaign over the past year and over $15 million from Senate Majority PAC since 2019. It's all such a nice money laundering operation, don't you think? The fact that Democratic campaigns and their affiliated consultants are profiting handsomely from the political persecution of President Trump should come as no surprise to anyone who follows money in politics. But the fact that an immediate family member of the judge overseeing this case is too presents an atrocious conflict of interest. Jonathan Turley said this yesterday. Only in Manhattan would they put such a ridiculous case with so many conflicts of interest, so many question marks, so many doubts about anybody getting a fair trial. When one considers the additional fact that Judge Merchan went out of his way to personally contribute to President Biden's campaign in 2020, any reasonable observer of the matter would conclude that allowing this judge to continue to participate in the case is untenable and will be a glaring outrage to all Americans who believe in equal justice under the law, while greatly undermining the credibility of the case. In an order refusing to recuse himself last summer. So he was asked, you should recuse yourself. He was basically said that. Judge Merchan said he examined his conscience and he was confident in his ability to rule fairly and impartially. I mean, that's Fox Henhouse stuff. Who could possibly believe that? If Judge Merchan's own daughter is profiting from the case he's presiding over substantially, how can he be trusted to be fair and impartial in his rulings if tens of millions of dollars is not enough to spur a recusal based on a conflict of interest or at least the appearance of a conflict of interest? What is? Of course, this isn't the only case pending against Trump, where it was mired in conflicts of interest and ethical violations. I mean, obviously, we know from recent proceedings in Georgia, prosecutor Fannie Willis hired her lover to manage the prosecution of Trump, even though he had little prosecutorial experience. Over the last few years, Fannie Willis has paid him over $500,000, taxpayer money, through the Fulton County DA's office, which Wade then used, Nathan Wade, her lover, to take her on luxurious vacations around the globe. Why is this unusual? It's standard operating. The Democrats think it's A-OK. They continue to get away with it. Look, this sham, all these charges against President Trump, they should be dropped immediately, he says. But at the very least, politically biased activist judges whose families personally benefit from the case have no place overseeing a trial of this magnitude. Judge Merchan should have stepped back from this case so we can put the blindfold back on Lady Justice. They don't care. They need Donald Trump convicted, thrown in prison, and murdered. And that is such a disgusting thing for someone who loves this country to say. When we come back on the Wendy Bell Radio program, my friends, hour number three, the uniparty to the GOP. Only we get to interfere in elections. What am I talking about? Okay, don't go anywhere. We got it for you next.